Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody to the Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson. As of right now, we're the only father and son to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. There's been other father and sons, the Bibbies, Henry and Mike, Scott and Sean, to win national championships at different schools. But we're the only two, Chris, to win a championship at the same school. And I say as of right now because you've got the Boozers.
I
guess we'll see what happens. But listen, moving right along, we are so privileged to have this young man. He may be the oldest Milwaukee Buck, but he's still a young man to us. Thanasis Antetokounmpo, man, 7-year NBA veteran, NBA champion in 21, 2-time Greek League champion, the most spectacular player in 2018 and 2019 in the Greek League, born and raised in Sapolia, right? Sapolia. A neighborhood in Northwest Athens, Greece, and he's got one of the best podcasts around, The Analysis. He'll be live at the Riverside Theater March 27th, 2026. Who's going to be your guest, man? You always have like some outstanding guests falling through. Who you got for us this
time? So this year we have Ric Flair, the Nature Boy. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be entertaining. So it's gonna be good.
Now, were you WWE, Chris? Were you a big time wrestling fan growing up in Greece? How you tell me?
Yeah, 1,000%. My era was when they were transitioning from the WWF to WWE. So my era is the Kurt Angle, Stone Cold, Eddie Guerrero. Like that's my 2001 kind of upbringing, other guys obviously, but like yeah.
Stone Cold Steve Austin. So now, Thanasis, quick story, and Chris, you can finish this up. But I was playing with Golden State just for a brief shot of espresso, not even a cup of coffee. Just 10 games. I was out for 3 years, hurt my neck, tried to come back, blah, blah, blah. But there's a great story that Chris is about to tell you with him and Chris Mullen. Chris, how old were you then? You were all of 14 years old at that time?
14, 15.
Okay. All right, tell T the story. Tell T, he'll appreciate this.
Well, the deal was, so the WWF came through to the Oakland Coliseum. So Chris Mullen, who was my dad's teammate, took us to the arena, me and my brother Josiah. And so, a long story short, they tried to trip on us when we went backstage. You know how you could try to go to the locker room at the event, situation like that. They try to say, oh, no, you guys can't come. This isn't your night, basically, that you get to go in the locker room. So anyway, Chris Mullen was like, forget that. We're going in. We're getting some juices. We're getting some drinks or whatever. So we kind of bogart our way in. T.A., when we get in the locker room, I don't know if you remember these dudes named the Bushwhackers, but they were from Australia. They were these crazy wrestlers, these big dudes. They used to like hit their head and stuff. So we literally were about to get into a fight, a full-on fight with the Bushwhackers, with Mean Gene Okerlund. Mean Gene, right? The guy that's on the announcing. I'm 14 years old. And they're about to they're ganging up on us, man. We had to basically claw our way out of there. After that moment, I knew wrestling was real because those dudes meant business, okay?
Chris Mullen from New York, man, I love that story because Chris Mullen was about to throw down to you against these wrestlers. They're about to get into it, man, an all-out brawl back in the Warriors locker room. So.
Wow. Late 80s.
Yeah, man, it's all good. So listen, man, let's talk about you and your journey. I was trying to remember that there's a playground – basketball court, Sapolia, where you guys used to play, where you grew up. Is that the name of it, Sapolia? Is that the name of the playground?
Yeah, Sapolia. Sapolia is the name of the neighborhood, but like that's the name of the playground we played is Tritonas.
Okay.
That's the name of the playground.
Is that when there was a guy who was Giannis's kind of nemesis? I can't think of his name, but there was one guy that Giannis has talked about. I tried to grok it and Google it, but they couldn't come up. There's one guy that I forgot his name. He may have played for the Nationals. I don't know, but they used to butt heads all the time, and he was better than Giannis. Yeah. Was there a guy for you? Was there a guy for you that was like that?
Oh, so many. But like, I was like, so believe it or not, I was kind of like a
You that guy? Big, you that dude?
Yeah, yeah, a big Martin. So they, I was more like, and not only feisty, but, you know, I had to be like that, you know, because of my younger brother. And you can only imagine, you know, being black kids in Greece. Yeah. We're the only black kids in like a 2000, like, people school. Like, you know, yeah. I had to kind of be, you know, like, hey, you know, that's such and such, brother. Don't, you know, just be like that. But when it came to basketball, I feel like I kind of had a different mindset, kind of like trying to, you know, weave my way through people and, you know, not trying not to, you know, kind of trying not to compete with other guys. I did have like guys I learned from, like even the guy who played against my brother and he says like was better than him. That guy was like the best of the best at the time. Like at the time, like the 18 and 20, like the 16, 18, 20 years old.
What was his name?
And Nikos Papas.
What's his name again? Papas.
One of the best. Mind you, like, not a lot of people know this, but like, we all grew up in the same neighborhood. This is insane, right? Like, we all kind of, and you know, like, Greece is not like the AAU system here. You know, here you go, like, hey guys, we play all McDonald's, all American. We play this. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of gather, like a CP3 camp, LeBron camp, hopefully Giannis camp now. That's how we're trying to make something happen. Like, there's a lot of gathering. In Greece, no. Like, if you really, if you want to see somebody, you really got to be either national team, the highest level, right?
Yeah.
Or you got to, like, you don't meet them. Do you be a professional? Like, you don't get to meet them.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's a great story, man. And, you know, Chris growing up, I mean, you know, Were there actual fights? I mean, did you guys actually throw down, or was it just a lot of trash talking? I mean, some of the courts in Los Angeles, in particular, where we grew up, I mean, it could get. We had referees. One of my good friends, Lorenzo Clark, he used to actually carry a .22 pistol in his referee pants in his referee pants pocket. Chris, in the summertime, he refereed at the Crenshaw League, and once guys got a little too feisty with him, he just come on, he pat his pocket, like, you want to take this outside, I guess. But did it get to that level in Sapolia? Was it that, or was it a little bit less harsh?
I mean, when it came to basketball, we had those kind of moments. We've had moments like that, but our beef would be mostly like with kids who would come out of town and try to play in our playground, and you know, like, and they will have guys who will like be really good. And you know how it is. Like, you say, hey, my cousin plays basketball. And he plays, like, Division II or III or something like that. He brings his friends. And we had this one guy who would always go with the best team. He was older than us. He always hang out with us. And that was my beef with him. I was like, why did always, whenever we play, bro, you always try to go with the better team. Like, mind you, let's say it was equivalent to me. I was, like, 14. He's, like, 19 years old.
Yeah.
And let's say we'll have a kid who would come for the summer and he played in JUCO, he played college, whatever, and he'll come and play with us 3-on-3. He'll be like, oh yeah, I got him on my team. And like, why do you always, and I always get him, like, why do you always do this, bro? Let us just pick randomly and let's play. But that actually made us better, because what's happening is, like, you know, you play like when you're 12, 13, 14, when we started playing like a little bit more, you'd lose. And then you just develop this habit of like, hey, okay, guys, we're not playing till we win. We're not leaving this place till we win. And then, you know, and then the opposite started happening. And then we got to go play those guys. Let's go play Thanasis, Giannis, and those boys. Like, let's see where we at. So it was good. But I think, like, in terms of fighting, that was not related with basketball. That was related with straight something different. Right. It wasn't about basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, and how old was Giannis when he started to get picked first for teams, when you didn't have to bring him with you? Like, yeah, my little brother's playing with me. But how old was he when guys who were picking the teams, putting teams together, first started understanding that he could help us win and started picking him first?
No, it was never picked. It was always with me. Never. I never picked somebody else before. I'm picking first, and I'm picking him first. You know?
You always had him. You always had his back to put him on your team.
Was the point where
he was like legitimate? It was no question that he was going to be one of the dudes that was going to be on the court first.
So believe it or not, we didn't never have that moment, because when we started playing, we immediately just, like, took off. We never came back. Like, it was like, boom. We never had, like, it was like, because we started playing around like the 14 and a half, 15.
Yeah.
And we went straight to playing against, you know, obviously not professionally, but it was obviously against men who were playing like the third division, the fourth division. So we automatically went to that part.
Okay.
So
okay.
Then we would play once in like 2 years or something like that. Like we never played again. We never never played again. So we never had the chance to come back and be like, hey, we're the top dogs now.
Right.
It's our court. Because if that would have happened, nobody else would have played ever. Would have sat there and would have told everybody.
it's our court.
We gotta stay.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Thanasis, in those times of adversity, I know everything couldn't have always been, you know, just smooth sailing. Was there ever a moment where you ever felt like giving up on this journey, especially when you start playing against the older guys? Was there ever a moment where you got discouraged, you felt like giving up? If there was, how did you get through it? And just break that down for me.
Oh, I never had a moment in basketball like saying I'm gonna give up, but there was a moment that I said like this is not fair. Like so, we actually ended up getting our Greek passports, citizenship, when I was 18 and a half, something like that, 19, towards 19. But like when I was like 15 and a half, 16, after a year and a half playing, I would always get picked up for under 16 and under 18 and under 17, all these national teams. And I would always do the training camp, play the friendlies, but never make the team because I didn't have a Greek passport. That to me would always be devastating because I would go home. I'm like, wow, I know I'm good enough to make the team, you know, under 16 or under 18. And I would never make it because I didn't have a Greek passport. And it wasn't because of skill. It was because I didn't have it because of bureaucracy, you know, all these other things. Even though I was born and raised in Greece, went to a Greek school, had all the criteria, everything. It's just the bureaucracy was kind of different and, you know, set me like, I always had a setback. And I remember vividly that my last turning point was we played, I was 18 and a half and we're playing. We had two national teams. We had the national team, the A, and the national team B, right? The A was like the Spanoulis, the Madridis, all these guys, which was, they were awesome. And then you had the B that would go to different tournaments. So now we're playing a friendly game against the B team. And I'm like 18 and a half in Glyfada. We're playing in Glyfada. And I remember that game. Okay. And I'm like, wow, I'm playing good. I'm playing against these guys. These guys are actually like the second team of like representing the country. And we're having a great game against them. And then, you know, they call me. And, you know, they used to do like slick stuff. They used to tell me like, hey, we're waiting on your passport. We're going to see. We're waiting. You know, now looking back, I'm like, yeah, they were bullshit. Now looking back.
Yeah.
But at the time like that. And then when we sat down, they were like, yeah, you're not going to go to Italy to represent the country because, you know, your passport, they never came. Blah, blah. And then it wasn't ready or we couldn't find a situation, the solution to move, speed up the process. And then I remember I went home. I was like, all right, this is it for me. I'm going to try to find a way to either represent another country or, you know, like not even represent another country, but like find a way to play basketball. Because what you wanted to do is get a passport so you can play in Spain as a domicile and not as a American. You know, you get not to play as an American.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody who's played overseas knows the, like, those kind of like differences. So that was a big thing.
Yeah. And so now look, man, Yiannis has always talked about it, just your athleticism. Is there a story behind that? Like with me being able to, you know, get the 40-inch vert. I mean, I grew up in an area with a lot of hills. You ride our bikes up the hills. We run up the hills. Is there anything that kind of happened for you that kind of allowed you to get that serious boost that you got?
That definitely have two stories. One is, okay, obviously I grew up, but like, I grew in height, but like, so I had a bike that had like the steps in the back that you can, like, somebody can sit in the back and just like put his hands on your shoulder and just ride around. So I used to do that for like 3 or 4 years straight. Like around there, I would go sell stuff, and that's how we moved. We didn't have a car. You're not allowed to drive a car if you're 14, 15, or 16. You're not allowed to. So I'll have that bike.
It was a weighted bike. It had the weight on the back that you had to like pedal that weight up hills and weight up everything.
My brother and everything. And I remember I would be like, sometimes I would put the challenges too. Like I'll really go fast you got to understand, we're like 14 and 15 and we're young too. And we're doing all these things. And, you know, I had to always be able to maneuver and do stuff, especially if we were, you know, selling at night or we're going to restaurants or whatever it might be. And the other story was, after that, when I moved and I lived alone, I stayed in a three store home with no elevator.
Okay.
So I would have to, after
the steps,
count after countless practices, four floors. I'm on the top floor. And I would walk up and down, up and down, up and down. Yeah. Like no elevator for like 2 or 3 years, like just doing that.
How old were you then when you were doing that?
17, 18. Yeah. Okay. I was like, you know.
Yeah, so people don't understand that. And a lot of times it's those kinds of things that you do that all of a sudden gets that leg stripped on a whole nother level, man. And, and that's the deal.
Extra practice.
Yeah. So now, as a matter of fact, you know, I wrote a story about this guy, Reggie Harding, who played in the early 60s, one of the first high school to pros guys. I played a character in White Men Can't Jump that was based on this guy, Reggie Harding. And when they had training camps with the Pistons back in those days, they would have to get on each other's backs and walk up flights of stairs. That was that's what the coach had them do. That was one of their exercises. Like, hey, put a guy on your back, piggyback. Now you got to climb up the stairs, walk back down. And, you know, they take cigarette breaks and all that kind of stuff back in those days. But that's kind of the crazy stuff. So listen, you signed with the New York Knicks. Walk us through that, man. How did that happen? How did the family feel? How did you feel? I mean, man, to break it to the NBA had to be something special for you.
It was an amazing feeling. It was something incredible because I was not gonna get drafted. I was gonna go to Dallas. That was my thing. You know, I had a great workout with Rick Carlisle to this day. Like I even remember the workout. I didn't even remember the moment that they told my people, like, hey, like, we're really considering, like, you know, he forget about getting drafted to wanna bring him right in. And it was crazy because I had a great workout with Dallas and the drill was like, get the ball and to rebound. It's basically they shoot the ball and you get the rebound and that's how you win the game. And I might have got like 10 in a row and I was diving for the ball. I just wanted it more than everybody. Wanted it more than everybody. And then I did that. And then I did 18 workouts. And my first workout was with the Knicks. And the crazy part is while I was working with the Knicks, I actually did the interview with them. And I didn't think much, but now looking back, I don't know why they drafted me. Because when I was sitting down, they were like, hey, they were asking me about players. And they kept saying, you know, because it was two sides. I don't know if people remember this, but it was two sides of the Knicks. It was the Knicks, the New York Knicks, Allen Houston, and everybody else that was like in their organization. And then it was the other side of the Lakers that Phil Jackson came. So it was those two that when they were interviewing me, I remember vividly, I would sit down at the table and it was the Lakers side and the Bulls side from this side, kind of the Knicks. And the Knicks would ask me, you know, regular questions and it's like, hey, like, you know, where do you live? Do you have a spouse? Do you have kids? I'm like, no, these other things. And the other people would ask me, like, what do you think about Dennis Rodman? I'm like, oh, true. Okay. Yeah. What do you think about Trevor Ariza? And then now looking back, I was like, oh, they were comparing me. They were trying to get say like, hey, because if I'd have said, I'm more of a star. I don't think I'd get drafted to the Knicks. Because I love those players, you know? They would be like, and Shannon Brown and all these kind of like cats that were saying, I was like, oh, okay. I get what they're saying. And then, you know, I ended up getting drafted. One of the happiest moments in my life because I was very, very worried. You know, when Giannis got drafted, I was like, wow, I got to make it. I got to do something for my family. I got to make sure we're good. And nobody says this, but, you know, once you get drafted, you automatically become a six-figure plus player. Automatically, once you get drafted. You know, like, either if you play in the NBA or don't play in the NBA, your name, you know, is
right.
That year is best 60 almost, right? Yeah. And I get drafted. Crazy. People don't even remember this in Greece, but some people, like, people probably remember this in Greece. Like, it was crazy. Oh, my God, he got drafted to the Knicks. You know, people don't even remember that Giannis got drafted, by the way, because Giannis was, like, in Milwaukee, and everybody was like, Thanas went to the Knicks. What is he going to do if he's going to play, blah, 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 all these things. And I talked to them, and I said, hey, guys, like, what's the plan? You know, because I was very goal-oriented. I was like, what's the plan? Like, am I going to sit overseas? I'm going to come here. They were like, no, you're going to come here because for the first time, we're going to have D-League at the time. And they said Westchester Knicks. So that was the first year, Westchester Knicks. I'm the first player that ever played with the Westchester Knicks. So I come in, I do that, do the workouts, everything. And, you know, and I had good vets. You know, I was around the team. I had some, and I had the cool vets to say, you know, the J.R. Smith, the Iman Shumpert, the, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Stoudemire. Yeah. That was my, yes sir. You know, those ones were like vets. So kind of saw that era as well. And then Derek Fisher came, you know, all this, you know, everything. But yeah, I'm bad. Right. But it was amazing.
I was wanted to flip it back to Greece, man, because when I saw the movie, The Marvelous Journey. That was such a powerful film. Y'all's story is one of the most powerful stories of all time. But the moment that really stood out to me, Thanasis, is when you guys were pushing that refrigerator down the street. When y'all had got evicted and you were pushing that refrigerator. Can you just tell me that story and just tell our viewers that story and the people that haven't heard it? Because, man, I thought that really showed a lot of just of the human spirit, man. It was really poignant.
Was it true? Was it a true story? Was it a true?
Yeah. Is that true?
Okay, 100% true.
Multiple
okay.
times. Multiple times. It's a true story. It's a true story. And I'll tell you what it is. It's a true story. But you know, people see it now and they go like, "Oh, it's a story. Look what they did." But for us, it's a family story. They're saying highs and lows. It is what it is. They, you know, we gonna find a way because that's the spirit. This is and this is what makes me. Oh, this is what I'm proud the most. Like, and it's combining, you know, it translated to the NBA and basketball and winning and all these things, all the accolades. But I'm mostly proud the most because when people see us, that's what they say. They're like, wow, did you guys really pull for each other? And now people kind of, after all this stuff came out, people kind of understood why we are the way we are. Because before it was kind of like, oh, what's going on? Like, these guys are together. That's what they're doing, and this is how they move. And then when all this came out, when all this stuff came out, they're like, it makes sense. Now it makes sense why how they are, and you know why like they have this tenacity. But why they are so unconventional? Even you know with all this with Giannis, like he wants to play, he wants to do. Like wow, they're so unconventional that anybody else would be like, no, it's not how we do. And why they want to just really push through the limits, you know, as much as we can. So,
And so I've got a good buddy, almost like Chris's uncle, but that my best friend since seventh grade, he coaches at my old high school, our old high school, Crenshaw High School, both Chris and I went to school there, Ed Waters. But he used to tell me, five, 6 years ago, Mike Budenholzer days, he would talk about you as being the culture guy. He's like, you got to play this dude. This dude plays harder than anybody on this freaking roster. You got to play. So I had some stats pulled up, and I got them pulled up again today just to refresh my memory. But when you played, Chris, look, when he's played, when Thanasis has played 25 minutes or more, he's averaged almost 15 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists a game.
That's crazy.
People start talking about the nepotism and because he's young. But when you've gotten minutes on the floor, I mean, you have produced. That was the thing that jumped out at me when I was doing Buck games. Like sometimes Coach Bud, he would start you Axel. I forget the kid's name, but he start this unit when he was kind of resting, maybe it started. But you get out there, man, you'd have a 20-point game or 17 and 9, man. Yep. But so my point is, just knowing that if you get the opportunity, you can produce.
Yeah.
How difficult is it? Let me put it that way. To not get that opportunity. I mean, knowing that when you've been on the floor, that you put up some really solid numbers.
I'm not going to lie to you. I really appreciate it to come from you because you're a legend. And you, like, not played basketball, not commented on basketball or just from outside. You live and breathe the sport. And I'm really honored. Like, I really feel honored that you said this. Because those numbers are kind of just hard numbers. Huh? These numbers is like legit. There's legit numbers in the NBA.
25 minutes.
Facts, bro. All facts.
So, and the crazy part, Jeff Tigg actually said this one of his shows, like, hey, I think if TA would have played, he would have averaged Josh Hart numbers, would have played more. My thing is this, though. This is why I take pride on what we do. Like, when I introduce myself to teams or when we start the season, I say, my name is Thanasis Antetokounmpo, and I'm committed to winning. Now, winning means a lot of things. Doesn't mean your way. Doesn't mean, hey, I'm going to play 25 a night. Or it doesn't mean, you know, I'm going to be the star player. It doesn't mean all the lights, bright lights are going to be on me. It doesn't mean I get all the praise and no, you know, no hate, right? And when I'm committed to winning, when I'm committed to my family, when I'm committed to saying like, hey, okay, listen, we're building something legacy here. And I've had the privilege to be with the best coaches and understand, okay, this is a system. This works. This doesn't work. Now, we implement it, don't implement it. There's two different things. But like to understand the game and played everywhere, now and overseas and here and to see, I sit down and I say to myself, okay, TA, you have as many years as you have. I'm going to play in the highest possible level that I can. And I'm going to win in the highest level that I can. Now, if that's not possible, that's not possible. And I don't understand. But like a lot of times the things about like, you know, either the nepotism stuff or people will say things like, oh, you should, why don't you go to another team? Like they'll give you more playing times and you should do this, you should do that. That happens when you don't do what people want you to do. Because people see themselves in you and they go like, I would never do that. But that's right. You mm-hmm. and not me. But no, you have so much talent and you have so much like this and that. And then I said, yes, I understand. But, you know, like I approach everything in a way, in a sense of like, who am I to act this way? Who am I to say all these things? I'm here. I'm grateful for the opportunity. I'm here to make something, to make the most of it, right? I remember, like, true story, like me coming out to the Bucks and I came back from my injury. And thank God I'm, you know, well and I'm running and I'm jumping and all these things. But when I was coming back, it was a little bit, it was certain people in my circle was like, wow, just wait, get healthier. Like, why would you go to the Bucks and this and that? And, you know, like try to figure it out another way. And I said, guys, you're telling somebody, this is the element of illusion of people, the grandeur. Yeah. I said, you're telling me that, oh, I shouldn't do that. When it's guys who are almost out of the league, I could make all these kind of guys who were in a limbo. They didn't know yet where would they go, was going to be. And you want to have this kind of notion like, yeah, I think you should. No, there is no, I think you should. For me, is a roadmap of life. And I already know my roadmap of life. And I'm it's right on track. It's been great, you know? So I do think a lot of people have this, this feeling that they have to make you do things or you should follow what they do. Like, no, you should be a disruptor. Yeah. You should do your thing. And people will respect you more when you do it. And you do it with a smile, charisma. They will respect you more. They're like, you know what? I talk about him, but like this kid, this guy's, he's good, man. It's a good kid. Yeah. Like he does his own thing. Yeah. You know? So I'm mostly proud of that though.
Yep.
To be honest with you.
And speaking of that, man, Giannis told a great story recently that I'd never heard. It was during the years when Brooke and Drew and Chris and Giannis, he talked about how there was some, I won't say dissension, but there were some attitude issues or something going on. And he said that you pulled them all. You recognize the story. Tell us that story.
Oh, man. First of all, I didn't want to say the story, but the only reason I'll tell you guys is because he said it there and, you know, and other people have asked me as well. It was just a tough stretch. And what was happening was, we were having a little bit of like, you know, you're forgetting the basics.
Yeah.
Right. And my only goal here is to remind people of the basics. What is the basics? Guys, we go out there, we compete, we play together. And, you know, and you do this while not being sensitive. And that was the whole title. Like, when have we become so sensitive? Like,
yeah.
But I don't understand. We've played 14, 15, 20, 20, 20, 20 years plus, 15 years plus everybody. Like, guys, this is what we do. Coach tells us what to do. We get it done. And at the same time, you know, it works, does it work? We try to get it done. So I think for me at the time, it was mostly to give them, you know, my support and my backup saying that. But at the same time, you know, people sometimes realize this, but people don't realize that I grew up in a team my whole life. I grew up with brothers my whole life. This is what I've done. Like, this is what I've done. Like, I sit down. And at the same time, I have people in different levels. Yeah. Think about that. Think about what is the verbiage and what is the language I have to use for my younger brother, for my older brother, right? And what happens, what's the verbiage I got to use if your younger brother is actually more successful in what you do and you have to actually persuade him to say like, yo, yes, yeah. I get that, but this is what you need to do. So it takes a lot of people skills, yeah, people skills and a lot of like understanding how people receive information. Everybody's different. Everybody's different. Yeah. You know, I listened to a great seminar from coaching from a coach from coaching Europe, and he said that back in the day, every player used to play like one coach. Like you see Duke, oh, everybody they play like this because they're coached by this guy. They play like this because they're coached by this guy. Nowadays, yep. one coach has to be 12 different players. Everybody's yeah. different.
Right.
It's different.
Yeah.
10 different characters, 12 different characters, 12 different souls. Like it's different. So you got to understand to get to maximize the potential from everybody, I have to go out there and figure out what motivates them. Hold that in the back of my head when the time comes. And then say, okay, listen, I know you want to go out there and do this. But you know what's even better? While winning. Do it while winning. Do it while this guy's happy. Do it while this guy's happy. Do it while this guy's happy. So that is, it takes a little bit. But, you know, I've had experience with this. So now with this.
I know we got to let you go. But I just want you to let us give you an opportunity to express kind of what it's meant for you to be in Milwaukee as a Milwaukee Buck, all the great things you've experienced, and even a season like this where it's been not so great, a lot of noise going on with Giannis and his situation. The final question, just this journey for you, talk about that for us.
I have the same sentiments as the fans, by the way. I've been here in a minute. You know, Mr. Marcus, I mean, Chris probably knows, but like, Mr. Marcus, do you know what the multiverse is? Marvel, like the multiverse? It feels
yes,
like
sir.
I'm in a different like parallel universe. Like, I'm like, how is this happening?
You know?
But then I understand it, you know, and then I got to put my head down and work even harder and not even work even harder in the basketball court, like in my heart and mentally and say, like, don't let this defeat you and just like really show up with a smile, do what it takes and then, you know, fight like through every game. In terms now of like being a Milwaukee Buck, like this is a blessing. I came back from this kind of injury. People walk up with me like I came back from like, you know, it's for me, like I go in, and Mr. Marquis can attest to this. Like I go in, I get a standing ovation, like everywhere. Either I'm in Milwaukee or I'm in another stadium in Charlotte. Like I already saw, like this is, you know, something, it's a blessing. And, you know, the only way I can just give back and say it's just with love and just, you know, keep being me, obviously. But like, I always appreciate them and I always tell them, even through my podcast or through playing or through, you know, being at the arena, these people, you know, gave me so much. And we tried as many years we've been here to, you know, give back.
Yeah.
The only way we know how, you know, work hard and, you know, just do it. So I'm very, very proud of the guys. I'm mostly like, sometimes I feel like for the new guys too, like to get the sentiment, like this is not the Buck. Like this is not, you know, this is not exactly what we've had throughout the years. Like, you know, trying to give them like, hey guys, this is, you know, it's only gonna get better. It's gonna get better, I promise you. But like, this is not exactly what we roll. This is not how we roll.
Yeah. Well, listen, man. You know, and I say this with all sincerity. You've been a true blessing to this organization, and we just appreciate you. I just want to let you know that. Just appreciate your spirit. Your spirit has always been just above, a cut above, and it's just been a real privilege and an honor for me to just kind of watch you as a basketball player just kind of exist in this, like you say, this complicated parallel kind of existence. But you've been a blessing, man. We've been a blessing, and good luck with you. Good luck to you.
I need you guys to come to my show. Come to my show
anytime.
We'd love to.
But you're at the Riverside Theater, March 27th, live analysis. You've got who's that wrestler, Chris? Who's
Ric Flair, baby?
Ric Flair, the Nature Boy. Ric Flair. I know it by the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. All right, team man. Thank you, man. I'll let you go. Enjoy your day, man. We thank you so much for stopping by here, Dietrich, man. Really appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay.
Thank you.